Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello and happy Thursday. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan. Oh, let me tell you, and we'll be honest, it's been a heavy day. It's been a lot, but we are keeping our eye on the prize, and that is gratitude right now. And what we can see in our lives that is working, and grateful, being grateful for our good friends, our colleagues, our loved ones, our own health right now, and also inviting us all to feel what we're feeling. And while we're doing that, being there for each other.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry, I just went there right away. I'm sorry. I had to, because it's real. Oh, Ryan, I love you. You're having a Hoda moment.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, like you said, today is very heavy, and we're just trying to figure it all out together. And I think that's the sweet spot of this, right? Is that everyone is in it together and you're not feeling alone, but I think it also still can feel like you're alone.
Oh, of course.
I'm sending so much love to everyone around that, you know, is possibly just losing jobs or not figuring out their money situation until stimulus package comes, and like everyone's just going through stuff. And
or people who have had friends or family who have died from this.
Yeah, like it's a lot happening out of nowhere. And I'm grateful that we get to do this and we get to remain busy and just figure it out one day at a time.
Exactly. We appreciate you for being part of our family and continuing to support what we do and what we really love doing. It's such a gift to be able to be doing this every day with all of you and with you, Ryan. I love you dearly. We need to get into this, but as you can see, there's real heart behind this. So we appreciate everyone.
Bright side of this is that it's Autism Awareness Day.
Yes,
and we are getting to use this platform to celebrate them, people with autism, and seeing how it's impacting, you know, COVID-19 is impacting that industry and just people in general, you know?
And I'll say the bright light has also been, one, getting to see you every day, getting to share what's happening, informing people, entertaining people, bringing these raw moments that, man, this was not planned. And then the people we get to interview, some of the experts, the celebrities also, to hear them over Zoom saying, wow, this was such a highlight, because we get to continue sharing their stories and bringing them to all of you and continue to remind them that they get to keep working and spreading their message. All right. We're going to get into some what's trending in the news.
Let's get into the show, please.
Let's move on. All right. What's trending in the news right now? Trump announced that he's just signed the Defense Production Act against 3M for the production of face masks.
In addition to the one that I've just signed against 3M for face masks, we just signed a element of the act against 3M. And hopefully they'll be able to do what they are supposed to do. Just spoke to Mary Barra of General Motors, and she said they're very soon going to be ready to start production of the ventilators. They have a lot of ventilators that they've committed to build.
He also is using the coronavirus briefings to complain about oversight of his administration.
Have already done extraordinary damage to our country in recent years. You see what happens. It's witch hunt after witch hunt after witch hunt. And in the end, the people doing the witch hunt have been losing, and they've been losing by a lot. Conducting these partisan investigations in the middle of a pandemic is a really big waste of vital resources, time, attention, and we want to fight for American lives, not waste time and build up my poll numbers, because that's all they're doing, because everyone knows it's ridiculous.
And this
many
is
all people.
No, of course, and obviously this is a response to Nancy Pelosi, which we'll be talking about a little bit later in the show, and how she is starting to investigate this situation, right? And who dropped the ball here? And that's, I think he's a little worried about that, because they're going to start pulling these facts and receipts against him.
I almost think if you just said I'm responsible and been a leader in that way, people would stop digging in, because they'd be like, yeah, you've already effed up. You've said you've done it, and you've been clear and transparent about what happened. We're moving on. But let's also be clear. We need to focus on action right now and solutions. Like, I respect that Nancy Pelosi is looking into this and it needs to happen. But let's also be clear about what needs to be done to
first. Right. What's
to,
the priority?
Yeah, save Americans right now, their health, financially, so we could come out of this, you know, as soon as possible. Well, the FDA has eased the ban on gay blood donations amid the coronavirus crisis, with a lot of pressure during this crisis to lift its policy barring gay men from donating blood. The FDA announced finally today that it has eased those restrictions. Now, the previous policy established in 2015 barred men who have had sex with men in the 12 months from making a donation, but the new policy shortens the deferral period, requiring abstinence for only 3 months. They said their decision was based on evaluation of the totality of the scientific evidence available and to help address this critical need and increase the number of donations. So that's a good thing. It's unfortunate that it took a crisis for us to get there. Now, many Americans may have to wait months for coronavirus relief checks, the first Americans to get relief payments from the government under this coronavirus legislation signed into law last month, won't see the money until at least the week of April 13th. Many people who don't have direct deposit information on file with the IRS might have to wait months to get the money. Now, the document estimates that about 60 million Americans will receive checks at that point. Okay, well, coming up, the bipartisan House committee who are investigating, as we mentioned, the federal response to the coronavirus. Will it make a difference? That's next. We are back and bringing you some deeper what's trending in the news right now. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced that a bipartisan House committee will investigate the federal response to the coronavirus pandemic and ensure that congressional funding is spent wisely. Here's what she had to say.
In the coming months, over $2 trillion will be spent on this rescue effort. We have no higher priority than make sure the money gets to those working families struggling to pay rent and put food on the table who need it most. That is why the House will be creating a special bipartisan oversight panel to ensure that the $2 trillion that Congress has dedicated to this panel, the House Select Committee on the Coronavirus, will be bipartisan and have an expert staff. The committee will be empowered to examine all aspects of the federal response to coronavirus and to ensure that the taxpayers' dollars are being wisely and efficiently spent to save lives, deliver relief, and benefit our economy.
Now back with us, we have Fox News contributor Richard Fowler. Thanks for being here. It's been a while. We miss you.
How are y'all holding up in this COVID-19 world that we're living in, Shira and Ryan?
I mean, we're doing what we can. We are doing what
I mean,
we
yeah,
can.
We're making sure that we're making sure that we bring the news to everyone, because our listeners are, you know, relying on that, and we're happy that you could join us. How are you doing?
Listen, I can say this, you know, I'm socially distancing. I made some beef dish pizza today, so there's that. But life is good. But I mean, to get to this news story, right? What we're hearing is that on Capitol Hill is that Pelosi will create a bipartisan special committee that will focus on, number one, how has the federal response been to corona, right? Which I think is the main issue. I mean, I was watching a story just today of a couple that went on a cruise because the president told them that at the time and in the moment, it was okay for them to go on a cruise in early March. So there has been some misinformation from this White House on how they're dealing with this crisis. And so I think it's important to look in on it. Now, mind you, I don't think that's their first priority. This committee's first priority should be in ensuring that everybody can get the resources that the Congress has already passed in the $2 trillion spending bill.
Yeah.
And number two, also ensuring that, you know, the money that is being spent wisely and people are getting the resources they need. And once this is all over and once we get out of this, and I think it's fair for members of Congress to actually provide some level of oversight to the administration to figure out, how did it get so bad? Where were the tests earlier? I think the question that every American is asking themselves.
Yeah, like who dropped the ball at this point? And, you know, honestly, I love that Nancy Pelosi is always on it. She's always ready to keep her foot on somebody's neck, especially President Trump. And I want to move on to another, you know, breaking news kind of situation that was happening all day yesterday. U.S. intelligence community had concluded in a classified report to the White House that Beijing underreported both total cases and deaths from the disease. Now, Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hu Chuang, I'm totally butcher that, on Thursday defended as open and transparent, saying China's response to the virus first identified in December in the central Chinese city of Wuhan. Now, what are we thinking about this? Because if they were not as transparent as we would have hoped they would have been, how screwed are we?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it's one that is worth exploring. So what I've seen from my research is this, that the scientists have been transparent. So the reason why we're able to even get as far as we've gotten with a potential virus, with possible treatments, is because scientists in China have been working with global scientists to figure this thing out. And they immediately, once they coded it, they put it out there. It's been open source, and various scientists around the world have been contributing to creating a possible solution to this problem. Now, given how the communist government of China responded, now that's another story. And we should have known all along it was almost a dead giveaway that we weren't going to get clear information. But the fact that they shut down their entire economy should have been the point when America said, wait a minute, this is pretty serious. China, one of the world's largest economies, has decided that it's going to shut down, right? Fully quarantine. And that does that. If you see China doing that, maybe that's the moment in time where you say, maybe I should be doing the same thing or preparing for what that could look like if it happened in the United States. And that's where this administration failed miserably.
Yeah, but it goes back to how we all think we're so separate from each other. We function separately in this world that we live in. And I think we're seeing the results of that with how quickly this is spreading. This is a global issue.
Agreed. Sure, I couldn't agree more.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the foreign ministry spokeswoman for China, she basically said some U.S. official just want to shift the blame. She said, actually, we don't want to fall into an argument with them, but faced with such repeated moral slander by them, I feel compelled to take some time and clarify the truth. I mean, it does feel like, well, why would you not look at the signs around us and seeing how people are moving? Why would you not do anything? Why was at a time was Donald Trump calling it a hoax by the Democratic left? Like, what, that is ridiculous to me, right?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. I think it's what most Americans are saying. Like, it's not a hoax. People in China have it, and it's over there. And we're not going to have a response. And then when he says, oh, everybody can get a test, and we know to this day that not every American can actually get a test.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Richard Fowler, thanks again for being here with those insights today. We appreciate you.
I appreciate you, Sharon Ryan.
And you can find Richard on Fox News as a contributor and also on his Instagram at Richard A. Fowler. Now, U.S. President Donald Trump did say yesterday that he hadn't received an intelligence report saying that Beijing had concealed the outbreak, but that their statistics appeared low, saying their numbers seem to be a little bit on the light side. And I'm being nice when I say that. That's what he said during that daily coronavirus briefing at the White House. Okay, we are moving now into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
Oh my God, two celebrities, y'all. They decided to, we're going to open up a gym and go, even though there's a lockdown happening in the state of Florida. Find out who those two people are coming up next. We're back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And y'all, let's get into this mess because Jennifer Lopez and her fiance, Alex Rodriguez, they went to the gym despite Florida's stay-at-home order. Now, let me break this down because this is like really bubbling. My blood is boiling right now.
Yes.
So J-Lo and A-Rod, they decided that, guess what? They're not going to let this quarantine keep them away from working out. They always Jennifer's got the body snatch. You know, J-Lo's 50 and she looks like she's 25. Well, the couple was spotted leaving their local gym in Miami on Wednesday, despite the fact that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced a statewide stay-at-home order as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, this whole thing is appearing that the gym made an exception just for them, as there is a sign on the door that says the facility is closed. The sign read, "The gym is not open. Stay home, stay safe." Now, J-Lo's security made sure to wear a protective mask and open the car door with what looks like to be, a sanitizing wipe. But sure, let's break this down, because if you, especially after seeing all these celebrities trying to get involved and they're doing these videos saying stay at home, why did J-Lo and A-Rod think this was the smartest idea to go to the gym and have them create an exception for them?
Okay, you know why? Is because they can. Because the owner probably was like, don't worry, it's closed, it's all clean, but we'll let you in because you're special, you're a VIP, you're a celebrity. And this is the big issue here. I think a lot of people are sick of hearing from celebrities telling others what to do, stay at home, when a lot of these celebrities have huge places, they're infinity pools, they're all taken care of, and it's easy to tell someone to stay at home when you have that, when a lot of these people who they're telling, they might just live in a studio apartment, and you're telling them to stay at home when you're probably going crazy and you're like in your little space.
Yeah.
So there are realities to this situation. A lot of these celebrities aren't taking into account and doing things a bit in a tone-deaf way. That said, also, you would think with being as rich as they are, what, they don't have like their own gym at home? Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand why they felt the need to really show off how privileged. And this is what I go back to saying, you know, and where you just mentioned it, these celebrities are so tone deaf. They're wrapped around their own reality, and it's not realistic. It's not everyone's case. And, you know, even I want to bring this up. Diddy, he even has a video online of him like praying for everyone, and everyone's like, I think this is nice, thank you for praying for everyone, but also you are also in that kind of top million dollar gang.
I don't know, he's not in the billion dollar,
well,
but yeah,
million dollar gang,
yes,
of celebrities. And there's something to be said about there's more that could be done. And this is after, you know, this order came after, you know, Florida's COVID-19 cases neared 7,000 people. And there's also speculation that the state's outbreak probably happened during the Super Bowl, because that was in February and all that stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And also with the spring breakers and everything, and the governor was way too slow. That said, I think the only way they'd get a pass on this whole gym thing is if they said, this gym is in need of money and we're actually supporting them through this time. Like, we're giving them money to keep their staff on board and to keep it open. But even though it's closed, that's the only way they get a pass right now. If they're like, oh, we're a co-investor, we're going to be like continuing to support them, so they're letting us use the space just for ourselves.
Yeah.
Then I'd be like, wow, that's interesting.
Well, here's the thing. I think I would love to continue this conversation.
Yes.
Sound off at wearechannelq.com. That's where we're always going to find all the entertainment stories. And of course, keep us followed, and really sound off at LGT Show. Let us know your thoughts. Are they in the wrong for this? Would that even make an exception if they were saying, guess what, we're donating to this gym to keep them going? I don't know. For me, that's not the case. But either way, I'm done spilling the tea. What's coming up next, Shira?
All right. Well, everything you need to know about the census and how this organization is trying to make sure the LGBTQ community is getting proper representation. Now, the census was April 1st, and that was Census Day, but you still have time to fill out the form. And Megan Morey joins us right now, who's the policy director at the National LGBTQ Task Force.
Now, Megan, how is the National LGBTQ Task Force getting involved with the census?
That's an awesome question. So we've been focused on the census since 1990, and for a really long time, our focus was pushing the Census Bureau to ask better questions on sexual orientation and gender identity. We're still doing that. But for this census, for the 2020 census, we're also really focused on making sure that LGBTQ people get counted, that they fill out their form and complete the 2020 census that, as you just pointed out, is arriving in everybody's mailboxes right now.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting right now is I feel like it's a lot of people's first times even like finding out what a census is, especially for me. This isn't my first time voting, but I didn't even know there was a census that kind of followed election season or if it happens outside of election season. Can we break that down for a lot of the first timers? Like, what exactly is this?
Yeah, totally. So once every 10 years, the U.S. government does a head count, basically, of everyone in the country. They're just trying to figure out how many people are living in the U.S., mm-hmm. regardless of citizenship status, so that they can do things like allocate our tax dollars to states for things like education funding or health funding, but also so that they can do like political apportionment. So figuring out how many representatives each state has in the House of Representatives, but also what our districts look like at the state and local level. And then our communities use the data, too, to make decisions about things like where to put bus routes and where to open a new grocery store and where to have the local walk-in clinic.
So this is
there's a
all,
bunch of different uses of the data.
Yeah.
So this is obviously all very important when, like, on a daily basis. But because of the climate that we're in right now and everyone is worried about what is seems to be more important things, How are people going to even get involved in the census when they're dealing with, you know, the coronavirus outbreak?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough time for us to be doing the census.
Yeah.
People can respond online by phone or by mail. So there are a lot of options for you to participate from home. And you're absolutely right. It is not the most critical thing on a lot of people's minds right now. Many of us are dealing with illness ourselves or are caring for friends and family members. Mm. But one thing to keep in mind is that it's sort of a down payment for the next 10 years. Participating in the census has impacts for federal funding, for how we allocate resources even during a time like
yeah.
right now,
wow.
For the next 10 years. So if we don't participate now, our communities are really going to be losing out for a long time.
And you, unlike the past, I know there was a controversy around it where you needed to put in your citizenship or if you were legal, right? Something like that. Like there was something around being an American citizen and it scared people off from filling it out. Is that
yeah.
still the case?
No. So basically every 10 years, the Census Bureau looks at the questions on the form and they say, are there tweaks we need to make to collect better data? That's, you know, how we were trying to push them to add sexual orientation and gender identity questions. There were also improvements considered around race and ethnicity questions for this time around. But the current president also inserted himself into that process and said, you need to add a question on citizenship status so we know whether or not people are citizens. That was a political play that
yeah,
was
of course.
Not necessary. That data is better collected elsewhere for what we do need it for. And would have harmed the count considerably. So there is no citizenship question on the census. The Supreme Court put a halt to it and said, you can't do that. And there will be no citizenship question on the 2020 census. So when you see your form, there's going to be no question on there.
Okay.
So to wrap this up really quickly, how is the National LGBTQ Task Force involving queer people of color? Because this could really change a lot of, you know, our lives. And how are you kind of in engaging them to be excited about something like this?
Well, what we've found is that the most relevant thing for people is understanding how the census actually impacts their lives. So we know that queer people of color are much more likely to use and need public benefits like public housing, food stamps, Medicaid, as are other pieces of the LGBTQ community, like
for sure.
trans and non-binary folks and folks who are LGBTQ folks living with disabilities. So we've centered those communities in all of our messaging and said, this is how this is relevant for you. The census drives federal funding for those programs, for public housing, for food stamps, for Medicaid, but also for things like HIV programming and for homelessness and housing instability programs. So we try to center the pieces that are most relevant for queer and trans people of color so that they feel invested in participating. We're also directing all of our advertising dollars and that sort of thing towards communities of color as well.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, Megan Mori, thanks again for joining us during this crazy time. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Yes. Megan, again, is the policy director of the National LGBTQ Task Force. To complete your census form today, just go to 2020census.gov. Now, coming up, why our favorite Dr. Fauci is getting threats and now needs security. That's next on What's Trending in the News, top of the hour. We are back, coming to you from our home during quarantine, bringing you What's Trending in the News, top of the hour. Now, President Donald Trump's campaign has sent a letter to Jeff Sessions demanding that the former attorney general stop using Trump's name in his campaign materials for his U.S. Senate bid.
Really?
This is interesting, coming from, by the way, Trump's camp, and Trump himself is typically uses even people's songs without letting them know. So this is quite ironic.
And Jeff Sessions worked for him, and I know they ended things pretty roughly, but still, like, Jeff Sessions at one point when he got fired was still very pro-Trump. So for him to, like, kind of send this cease and desist situation is very shady.
They said, we only assume your campaign is doing this to confuse President Trump's loyal supporters in Alabama into believing the president supports your candidacy in the upcoming primary runoff election. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Oh,
he has had, a grudge for a long time against his former attorney general, whose recusal from the Russia investigation in early 2017 led to the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller.
It's like, someone needs to tell them, hey, guess what? People are dying and we're in the middle of a pandemic, and you want to send cease and desist letters and have your chief operating officer of the Trump campaign to say nothing can be further from the truth than President Trump supporting you. It's just like, this is all petty, and it's just shows how, you know, our celebrity in chief is all about his reality TV, and he loves a plot line and he loves the drama, and it's so annoying.
Exactly. Well, let's move on to someone that a lot of people have grown to love, Dr. Anthony Fauci. So a lot of people are trusting him to help us all deal with the coronavirus crisis. And he has now been given increased security after threats to his safety. That's according to a source familiar with the matter who told that to ABC News.
What?
And the source did not reveal the nature of the threats against Fauci, who, by the way, is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. But in recent days, on the recommendation of the U.S. Marshals Service, the department approved a special request from the HHS for more than half a dozen HHS Inspector General special agents to provide protective services for Fauci. More than half a dozen.
I mean, more than
That's
half.
That's a lot.
That is a ton. So, I mean, my thing is, why would someone want to hurt this guy? And he's the one that's really on the front line of this. Like, he is trying to get us safe. And y'all want to now, I mean, it's probably the conspiracy theorists that are saying this is all a hoax. They're still, you know, fueling that terrible narrative instead of taking this seriously.
No, I think they just want to surround him 6 feet from everyone else to make sure he doesn't get sick.
Maybe. That could be a good plan.
Or why don't they put him in, like, a big bubble? You know those videos of people in this big invisible bubble, like clear bubbles.
Yeah, but no.
I know. I don't even think those
really
work. First
of all, they don't even social distance in the press conference. So there's really no room for a bubble.
You can see him kind of stand to the side a bit more these days. Now, cardiac patients who can't be revived at home must be declared dead. That's according to some orders given to EMS teams in New York. And it's effective immediately. Patients in cardiac arrest will not be transported to a hospital if first responders cannot get a pulse on their own while administering CPR. That's from a memo obtained by ABC News. Okay.
Wow.
City hospitals are overrun, as we all know, with COVID-19 patients, and some cardiac patients may not receive the medical care they need to survive. The deputy fire commissioner, Frank Dwyer, told ABC News these orders are binding and the FDNY will devise a plan for implementation.
So how are people supposed to, I know that obviously COVID-19 is very important and it's obviously at the front line, it's a priority, right? But how is everyone else that are dealing with other things supposed to get treatment? It seems like there's no plan for that. And a lot of people are either going to die of COVID-19 or, you know, other things because they weren't able to get treated. This is so sad.
Yeah.
This is very sad. And you know, one thing I was thinking about a lot of the COVID-19 patients that have passed is that they're passing by themselves. Like, they're not allowed to be around anyone. And I know I was reading some stories about some nurses who had protective gear on. They were like holding the hand of some of the patients who were in isolation, because guess what? Those were their last moments. They didn't have family near them. They couldn't.
Yeah.
So for me, listening and hearing that,
really,
and reading that,
tragic.
It really does pull at your heartstrings, right? It makes you, it makes you very emotional.
Yeah, and grateful. Just let's all be here for each other during this crazy time. Yeah. Okay, that was some what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Coming up, what are people supposed to do if, you know, you don't have laundry in your home and you don't want to go out to do your laundry and just can't go out to do your laundry because we're all stuck at home?
Right.
What are the options? Coming up, the safest way to wash your clothes when we return. During this crazy time, something as simple as laundry might be something you can't do right now because you do not have laundry in your place. That is a luxury right now.
Yeah, and it's not that you probably can't even do it. It's, are you afraid to do it? Are you afraid of sharing a space with people?
Well, one, are you going to go to a laundromat? You know, we're all hunkering down inside. You want to stay safe. And then you're in these spaces that are communal. I would assume that's not very smart right now. So it is a very scary thing. And so we wanted to talk about the subject right now. Actually, we were inspired to get into it from this article in New York Times. The title of it was, "How Should I Do Laundry Now?" Very simple.
Very simple.
Who would have known or thought that we would be hungering down on this subject matter right now? Well, Dr. Angelique Korthals is joining us right now, who's an associate professor of forensic and biomedical science from the City University of New York. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So what are people supposed to do about laundry if they don't have laundry at home? Like, I don't get it. Is it safe to go to a laundromat right now or use your apartment laundry with everyone else?
And so there's several things. So the laundromat is quite different from the basement laundry, communal laundry that most apartment buildings have. So if you have a laundromat, I am praying that your laundromat has a system in place so that only few customers can go in at specific times, so that you don't have 20 people doing laundry at the same time, because that would defeat the purpose. And when you're going into the laundromat, there's all kinds of stuff that you have to do, which if you live in New York, you kind of do it anyway because you're used to grime and you're used to not put your stuff in communal places anyway.
Right.
So it's kind of something that should happen no matter what. So the first thing you do is you have to wipe out the surfaces that you're going to use with your old laundry. Just don't even bother unpacking it on any surface. Just dump it into the washing machine.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that if you have delicates, now is not the moment to launder them. So just, keep them for better days. And just wear your jammies.
So this is interesting, right? The article from the New York Times, they posed a great question. Should I have inside and outside clothes? So what does that really mean? Does that mean I have a separate pile of, this is what I wear outside and I leave it in a corner where I'm not touching it, versus what I'm wearing and putting on and changing into when I get inside my home?
Yeah. So what I would recommend you do is in the foyer of your home, or in your apartment, or
the
just
front. That's front foyer. Just
yes,
everyone.
The front. Yeah, yeah.
Might not know.
Yeah, the corridor, the front. I mean, the entrance of your apartment. Use painter's tape and make a line that defines the entrance to your apartment with the apartment proper.
Wow.
Everything that goes outside stays in the front of the apartment, so beyond on that side of the line,
yeah,
entrance exit side of the line, and everything else should not, that is coming from the outside, should not cross the line into the apartment. So that means your clothes, your shoes, your bags, your everything that is going outside should stay there.
Whoa.
And that's basically your hot zone in the apartment. Do you know what that term is?
Hot zone means some part of
contaminated.
Yeah, so hot zone is what we call in epidemiology a zone that's infected by a specific disease. And that,
So I know the CDC, is wild. And we're speaking with Dr. Angelique Korthals. She is an associate professor, forensic and biomedical science. Ooh, girl, the Department of Science at the City University of New York. Now, I know that the CDC is recommending how people can wash their clothes. Like, what are appropriate settings for people to wash their clothes on?
As high as you can go with that item of clothing. So that also dictates what kind of clothing you should be wearing, right? So definitely nothing in silk, unless you're going to do it by hand, and even then that's not a good idea. So everything that can sustain a very high temp, both in the washing and the dryer, because the two together are absolutely necessary, is actually what you really need to have.
And hand washing too, I assume. Just like if you can hand wash, go old school.
Yeah, but also it's not recommended to hand wash because you need those very, very high temps.
Okay, good to know.
The most mundane task now has become really difficult, and people are asking all kinds of questions about how to do groceries and stuff. Yes.
Real quick, I have one more before we get out of here. So I know some research is suggesting that the virus can actually be able to live up to a certain amount of days. Can you talk about that? Like, because people are obviously wondering, oh my God, if I touch something, how long is this on my items of clothing?
Right. So there's differential survival. So there's been a lot of confusion between survival and detectable. You can detect the virus for many days after it's been on a surface. That does not mean it's still active. Because that what it means is just the researchers have gone in and taken the RNA, and they said, oh, there's still RNA of that virus. That doesn't mean that the virus is still active. It does have a remarkable amount of survival on different types of surface, one of the worst surface being plastic. So if you have plastic on your clothing, which you do more than you think, like your zippers, for example, etc., then you have to be careful and make sure that, you know, either you don't touch it for a couple of days or at least wipe it down with alcohol.
That's why we got to live plastic free, baby.
No, that's true. Which is why I was asking, do you see this changing kind of climate change in the way production of clothes?
I think that there's so many, we've seen so many silver lining in this actual pandemic, from the drop in pollution. We've actually seen what happens when the impact of humans is reduced. And can we just sustain this kind of reduced impact? Will people finally wake up to the fact that, yes, we are really screwing up this planet, and we are seeing that because as soon as we disappear, everything comes back?
That's the big question.
But
yeah,
I think we can find a right middle.
Dr. Angelique, this has been so interesting. I really appreciate you being here today.
It's a great pleasure.
Dr. Angelique Korthals is an associate professor of forensic and biomedical science at the City University of New York. Now, coming up, cut her a check. Queen Herbie joins us to talk about powering through quarantine, going from viral star to full-on female rapper. That's next. We are back, and we continue to bring you interviews with some amazing people while we're all in quarantine. And I am so excited to introduce our next guest because I've known her like way back, like from the beginning when she went viral on YouTube.
Yeah.
And now then she was known as Carmen, Amy as Carmen, right? It was this group called
Carmen. It was a group. It was a wife and a husband group.
Yes. But now she is killing it. And oh my God, I was going to say a really cheesy thing that you were going to call me out on. Like, I was going to say raising the roof.
Whoa. You know what?
And then I caught myself, but I couldn't stop myself.
It's too early and I don't have any alcohol in my system right now. So please bear with me.
Queen Herbie is with us right now. Rapper extraordinaire and just badass female power woman. Welcome to the show, Herbie.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're like cracking up at that.
I know, I'm like, keep my microphone muted because I am cackling over here.
Good, that we need some laughter right now.
We really do. That's been the key for us, and just expecting there to be days that are great and days that are shitty. Just allow it to flow and let it flow through you. All those emotions, don't hold them in. It turns into real nasty stuff later if you do that.
It really does, and I think it's wild because we've been having so many great guests on, and we're really just checking in, because I think mm-hmm. that's so important right now. Mental health is very important. How mm-hmm. are you doing?
Thank you for asking. I'm doing great. I spend a lot of my time taking baths, like lavender oil drops in the bath, because I feel like it pulls all the negative energy off of me.
Yeah.
And then if you charge yourself, if you make sure to focus on self-care, then you can turn and give compassion and love to your friends who need it.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of myself as a battery right now.
No, that is, I look at energies and frequencies, go positive, you know, when you, and know when you're negative, and it's okay. Okay to go negative, you just need to have the tools. Let's talk about, all right, you've had the craziest journey. It's amazing to see where you're at and how far you've come. How did you create Queen Herbie? Because for me, it came out of nowhere. Obviously for you, it wasn't out of nowhere, but it was a long time coming probably.
For sure. I always say, you know, I had this disease to please that I grew up doing in Nebraska. Like people from Nebraska, it's like, we're very hard workers and we want to please people. And I found that after we blew up on YouTube back in the day, what was that, 2012 something?
I feel like it, oh yeah, okay, yeah.
It was when we first met.
Yeah, I thought 2011. Yeah, I was around then.
And I was near a decade ago.
I was just a young, I was just a young boy watching your videos, standing, you doing Busta Rhymes, you know.
Yes. And that's what, you know, it's interesting that the universe or God, you know, gave us that opportunity to then work backwards from this whole time, because as soon as we signed that big fat record deal, it was like, okay, now we're going pop music. You know, they had our best interests in a way that they wanted us to make money.
Yeah.
Of course.
And the people pleasing Nebraska girl was like, yes, let's dye the hair blonde. Let's do all these things. It was so typical. You know, hindsight is 2020, but they were also kind enough to let us out of the deal. And then we went on this crazy adventure of becoming independent artists after that. And it took a couple, well, it took one album. We did like the Leo Rising album and toured and learned what it meant to be independent.
Such a good album.
Finally cut the cord and started Queen Herbie, I want to say 2 years ago.
I want to go back to that people-pleasing idea, because it seems like that's something that you had to learn, not the hard way, but in some way you had to get out of that and you needed that moment to really shift who you were. Did you even want to continue? Was there any moment of doubt?
You know, there was a point where I was so, I realized how important R&B and hip-hop music was to me. And I was really disappointed one day. I woke up and realized I was just making pop music. And I just realized how important that was for me to be making the music I love. I'm like, well, I only have one life that I know of as me. And I just didn't realize how important that was. It ended up being more important than making money. And so once we got the bag, we were like, okay, cool. Let's pay off our like student loans. You know, we were broke. We were like willing to do anything, as I think anybody should be, you know, especially now during this like recession. I'm like, damn, I'm glad like we saved up a little bit.
Right. It's hard for everyone. And for you, like, we obviously met you through the viral video where you were rapping, but was rapping always something that you were focusing on, or are you just a singer, musician?
The rapping was a blessing in disguise, because I heard rap feature. I was not allowed. It was a Christian household, so we couldn't really, like, I was listening to Chronic 2001, but it was like not allowed.
Yeah.
I was like hiding, you know? Mm-hmm. And I always had this like attraction to it, but I never imagined in a million years that I would be accepted as a rapper. And that was actually a point of contention on the label. Like when we dropped the song Acapella, they were like not trying to play female rap on the radio at all.
Yeah.
And that was when I realized, well, wow, they're really behind. Because on my watch, I was like meeting all these talented female rappers. And I was like, we need to like basically draw a line in the sand, choose a side, put our eggs in a basket that we believe in.
All right, so we got more coming up with Queen Herbie. And of course, when we get back, I have to talk to you about, obviously, the elephant in the room, you being a white woman in R&B and hip hop. And have you gotten any pushback on that? And of course, we're going to be playing a clip of your new song, Check, up next. So don't y'all go anywhere.
We are back and we continue to bring you interviews with some amazing people while we're all in quarantine. And I am so excited to introduce our next guest, because I've known her like way back, like from the beginning when she went viral on YouTube.
Yeah.
And now, then she was known as Carmen, Amy as Carmen, right? It was this group called
Carmen. It was a group. But it now, was a, you know, wife and a husband group.
Yes. But now she is killing it. And oh my God, I was going to say a really cheesy thing that you were going to call me out on. Like, I was going to say raising the roof.
Whoa. Whoa. You know what?
And then I caught myself, but I couldn't stop myself.
I don't, it's too early and I don't have any alcohol in my system right now. So please bear with me.
Queen Herbie is with us right now. Rapper extraordinaire and just badass female power woman. Welcome to the show, Queen.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're like cracking up at that.
I know, I'm like, keep my microphone muted because I am cackling over here.
Good, that we need some laughter right now.
We really do. That's been the key for us. And just expecting there to be days that are great and days that are shitty. Just allow it to flow and let it flow through you. All those emotions, don't hold them in. It turns into real nasty stuff later if you do that.
It really does. And I think it's wild because we've been having so many great guests on and we're really just checking in because I think that's so important right now. Mental health is very important. How are you doing?
Thank you for asking. I'm doing great. I spend a lot of my time taking baths, like lavender oil drops in the bath, because I feel like it pulls all the negative energy off of me.
Yeah.
And then if you charge yourself, if you make sure to focus on self-care, then you can turn and give compassion and love to your friends who need it.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of myself as a battery right now.
No, that is, I look at energies and frequencies, go positive, you know, when you, and know when you're negative, and it's okay to go negative. You just need to have the tools. Let's talk about, all right, you've had the craziest journey. It's amazing to see where you're at and how far you've come. How did you create Queen Herbie? Because for me, it came out of nowhere. Obviously for you, it wasn't out of nowhere, but it was a long time coming probably.
For sure. I always say, you know, I had this disease to please that I grew up doing in Nebraska. Like people from Nebraska, it's like we're very hard workers and we want to please people. And I found that after we blew up on YouTube back in the day, what was that, 2012 something?
I feel like it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It was when we first met.
Yeah. I thought 2011. Yeah. I was around then.
And I was near a decade ago.
I was just a young, I was just a young boy watching your videos, standing, you doing Busta Rhymes, you know.
Yes. And that's what, you know, it's interesting that the universe or God, you know, gave us that opportunity to then work backwards from this whole time, because as soon as we signed that big fat record deal, it was like, okay, now we're going pop music. You know, they had our best interests in a way that they wanted us to make money.
Yeah.
Of course.
And the people pleasing Nebraska girl was like, yes, let's dye the hair blonde. Let's do all these things. It was so typical. You know, hindsight is 2020, but they were also kind enough to let us out of the deal. And then we went on this crazy adventure of becoming independent artists after that. And it took a couple, well, it took one album. We did like the Leo Rising album and toured and learned what it meant to be independent.
Such a good album.
Finally cut the cord and started Queen Herbie, I want to say 2 years ago.
I want to go back to that people-pleasing idea, because it seems like that's something that you had to learn, not the hard way, but in some way you had to get out of that and you needed that moment to really shift who you were. Did you even want to continue? Was there any moment of doubt?
You know, there was a point where I was so, I realized how important R&B and hip hop music was to me. And I was really disappointed one day. I woke up and realized I was just making pop music. And I just realized how important that was for me to be making the music I love. I'm like, well, I only have one life that I know of as me. And I just didn't realize how important that was. It ended up being more important than making money. And so once we got the bag, we were like, okay, cool. Let's pay off our like student loans. You know, we were broke. We were like willing to do anything, as I think anybody should be, you know, especially now during this like recession. I'm like, damn, I'm glad like, we saved up a little bit.
Right. It's hard for everyone. And for you, like, we obviously met you through the viral video where you were rapping, but was rapping always something that you were focusing on, or were you just a singer, musician?
The rapping was a blessing in disguise, because I heard rap feature. I was not allowed. It was a Christian household. So we couldn't really, like, I was listening to Chronic 2001, but it was like not allowed.
Yeah.
I was like hiding, you know? Mm-hmm. And I always had this like attraction to it, but I never imagined in a million years that I would be accepted as a rapper. And that was actually a point of contention on the label. Like when we dropped the song Acapella, they were like not trying to play female rap on the radio at all.
Yeah.
And that was when I realized, well, wow, they're really behind. Because on my watch, I was like meeting all these talented female rappers. And I was like, we need to like basically draw a line in the sand. choose a side, put our eggs in a basket that we believe in.
All right, so we got more coming up with Queen Herbie. And of course, when we get back, I have to talk to you about, obviously, the elephant in the room, you being a white woman in R&B and hip hop. And have you gotten any pushback on that? And of course, we're going to be playing a clip of your new song, Check, up next. So don't y'all go anywhere.
We are back catching up with rapper Queen Herbie right now. And this is such a pleasure, really.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I feel like who you are as a person could be heavily in the climate that we're in is very politicized. And at the end of the day, you know, let's be real here. You are a white girl in a space where particularly people of color really exist in, right?
For sure.
How do you feel about that? Have you gotten any kind of pushback on who you're, this change and who you are genuinely trying to be right now?
Absolutely. And I feel really lucky to be in this position, especially now that I'm comfortable talking about it. Because I think the biggest thing I noticed was that, you know, a lot of white girls doing hip hop, or like, I hate this word urban music, but urban music, is like they were not comfortable talking about it. And that's kind of the biggest problem is like, right. No, but like racism is still real, like it's systemic oppression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like systemic oppression of black and brown people. And then the white people that don't think it's real. Like I'm from Nebraska. We hardly have any black people at all. I was like idolizing these black artists growing up.
Yeah.
And then when I got to the city, I was like, oh shit, it is like, it's like that. I do think it's important to always acknowledge who inspires you. And I think it's going to be part of my responsibility as an artist now, my opportunity to educate people on these things.
Yeah, but also you now get to pave your own path, right? And I think that is also important as well.
I think so too. Yeah. And just appreciating, like really showing your love for the music and also the history. Like a lot of my, I see people that are discovering me now and they're like, oh, I don't even like rap music, but I love Queen Herbie. I was like, you really should listen to like these five albums so that you understand like the geniusness and the brilliance of rap, because I spent the last 7 or 8 years actually studying it so that I can make a meaningful contribution.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know, now that I've schooled myself on it, it's still, to me, the most envelope pushing, the most free art form in all of music. It's the new jazz.
Yeah. But you also have talked about how your parents don't really watch you as Queen Herbie.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
You know, I think how anybody would feel, it was really a bummer at the beginning, but at the same time, I understand because they're still in Nebraska. It's a different mindset there. They now have grandchildren, so they're not thinking, like, I'm making music for grownups, essentially.
I relate to that in so many ways, just because your family never really understands it, especially because I'm from the South. And so this with my mom, I tell my mom about, like, the cool people that we've interviewed that she would understand and get a kick out of. Like, I told her that we interviewed an astronaut. She was like, oh, I just told your grandmother. But she doesn't. She doesn't follow
selective.
It. Yeah, it's very selective. And if I'm being candid here, sometimes it does affect me emotionally when I'm like, I do want to share these moments with like the one person in my life that is like my mom. Have you ever kind of felt that?
Yes. And you know, my mom and dad always remind me how proud they are of where I am. They're just not on board specifically with what I'm doing. Time will also tell, like what you're doing and what your parents might not understand. Like 20 years from now, hopefully they're still alive, but they might not see the way your legacy forms out. Yes. And that's okay, because your legacy is not for them, it's for the world.
I wanna just finally just talk about your song, Check, the new single.
Great.
Cause we're gonna just like play a bit as we wrap this up, but what inspired Check?
Well, Missy Elliott and Timbaland, because I think they inspired all the girls and boys. My producer, so I work with my husband and then my other producer, Pompano Puff. Like the three of us make all Queen Herbie tracks.
Mm-hmm.
He walks into the studio with this beat and we're like, hold the phone. What is this? He's like, I created this beat and it sounds like a really similar to a Missy Elliott beat. So we ended up having to go through this whole process of clearing the song with their camp, which was huge, like the fact that they signed off was such a huge honor.
Yes.
You know, the concept of it came from self-worth and like just telling you, you know, make sure you're demanding your value. We had a situation where we weren't getting paid for something that we were supposed to be paid for, you know? So I think a lot of people relate to that, especially right now. I was like, is this about the stimulus?
Come on.
Excuse me.
Well, here's a little bit of check right now on Let's Go There. Sign it on the X now. If you want the best, I'ma need a check. If you want the best, best, I'ma need a check. Throw a little bread, queen is gonna bless. Get the papers with the birds, always coming with the mess. Cause I'm super duper clean. Dripping part of my routine. Yeah. Every time I pull up, it's a scene. Yeah. Got Ferrucci on my jeans. Look, for the money, baby. I'm a fiend. Over budget, what you mean? Yeah, everybody knowing I'm a queen.
Yeah. The bop of all bops. I'm honestly, seriously, you know, queen, I'm so proud of you for everything you're doing. And I can't wait to see even how creative you're being probably right now in the midst of this quarantine. And just when everything comes out, like, girl, bless my soul, because I think you're going to bless so many other people and just your fans. And we love you. Seriously, you're so talented.
I love you guys too. And I'm so proud of you. Look at us. We've been doing this. We have not given up.
No, it's all about that. It's not about not giving up and continuing to share your expression and yourself, your being with the world.
They need us. They need you guys right now, like real bad. You guys are probably a welcome energy out there.
Thank you.
Of all the things, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Herbie means warrior. Like, this whole project, I was like, warrior queen, you know? Like, it's.
Oh, I love that.
We are light workers. Yeah. We are light workers. We have to be out here just like battling. Some people don't even want the darkness. They just, it's just like very easy to get sucked in, but we can suck them out.
Oh my God, I'm going to cry.
No. I've known this about you guys since I met you. You can feel it when you see people.
So we'll be right back with more show, of course. After we, let's go grab the tissues and get our faces together. In the meantime,
exactly,
we're all about to take a cute picture. We got more show coming up next.
Well, that interview with Queen Herbie was a blast. She is awesome.
I know. She's amazing, right? And honestly, the way she opened up about her mom is just beautiful. It really made me just...
Yeah, and it's really great to see how far she's come since I knew
her. Was like, crying
way back. I was crying.
You were
crying. We had tears on this show. We've had some Barbara Walters moments right here.
They heard it. They
we're
heard
all
you
crying together. You can follow Queen Herbie on Instagram for the latest about her music. Also, some beautiful hot shots she has. She is hot. She's smoking. Go to her Instagram. It's QVEEN Herbie. Instagram.com. Queen Herbie.
Perfect.
Okay, now let's get into some what's trending in the news, top of the hour. Now, the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits soared to a record 6.65 million last week. That is a level that's unimaginable just a month ago. I mean, we are seeing crazy numbers here.
And it's impacting everyone, our friends, our families, people close to us, our coworkers. Like, it's impacting a lot of people.
Yeah, and of course, these figures will add pressure to the federal government to ensure that aid benefits and loans under the $2 trillion stimulus package get there quickly to people and businesses. This is not something we hope is put on hold or takes more time, because people need it right now.
I also think we're going to see another one happening. Like, I think we're going to continue to see these stimulus packages happen as, you know,
how do we get more money? Where does the money come from?
Well, I don't, to be
honest. We're just going to make like monopoly money.
But here's the thing. They can find it. I really believe they can, because obviously this is something that people don't know. Like, if we don't have money and people, $1,200 for the average American is just not going to cut it, Shira, especially when we're seeing numbers rise like this and unemployment is already backed up. And so they might have to do something else. And if they have to, then it just has to be done.
Yeah, well, we will see. Every day there's something new and we get a new update. It's happening very quickly. Now, Trump said that he had brokered a deal that would have had Saudi Arabia and Russia dramatically decrease their oil production, sending prices surging. But the claim was met with immediate skepticism. Now, Trump, who had been working on this over the past few days after oil prices plunged to a near 20-year low, he said on Twitter that he expected Saudi Arabia and Russia to cut output by as much as 15 million barrels. He didn't say the cut would be per day, but markets interpreted the tweet as that. So immediately following Trump's tweet, Saudi Arabia said it had called an urgent meeting of the OPEC Plus alliance that includes Russia as well as other unnamed nations to discuss a fair agreement, and that signals it would only cut output if others do so. So this is also what is impacting the market right now. Overall, a lot happening at once, and it feels like it's pretty complicated, but that's kind of like even small moves like that or a tweet from Trump can shift the market so
quickly. It can. I mean, he doesn't understand. And I feel like he does because he's power hungry, but I don't think he really grips and understands or grasps that his tweets can literally shift everything.
Yeah. Now, Asian countries that started to feel a lot of hope that their responses to the coronavirus pandemic were, you know, reaping results. There are now possible second waves. Wow. And that's brought by a rush of panicked people racing home to beat border closures and quarantine orders. Isn't that interesting? As daily numbers of confirmed cases start to rise again and new evidence of asymptomatic cases, now there's a lot of fear of community transmission and it has created stricter measures. Now, this guy, Jason Kindrashuk, who's an assistant professor and Canada research chair at Manitoba University's Department of Medical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases, that's a mouthful, said it was hard to know how daily life could return to normal until there was a vaccine and until governments know what the immunity levels are across the population. And this is not just locally where each of us are, but at a global level, which is why you're seeing the response in China being the way it is. He added that the concern with this virus is how to reduce social distancing measures and enforcement in such a way that you don't reignite transmission chains for the virus and find yourself back at square one with trying to get things contained. And I think until we figure this out, we will possibly see this everywhere.
I mean, yeah.
Like we're getting results and we're getting somewhere. And then we get too excited and we go back to our normal behaviors and then it comes again.
So I think there's a new normal.
Just like, let's keep it chill. You think this is the new normal?
I do think this is the new normal. I don't think this, we are going to be in this house for a very long time, in my opinion. I don't see us even, I know some people are saying longest is going to be June, July, but to be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if this lasted, what, until the end of the year type of thing. It just feels like because everything is so unclear about these possible second waves of such. And I know there obviously were reports about, you know, possible, you know, China wasn't letting us know about the actual numbers or the stats behind, you know, the cases and the total amount of deaths. I just don't know what's going on. There's a lot that you really can't trust, but we'll keep you updated, of course, and we have more show coming up.
We do. Oh, this is definitely a shift of topics. Okay, are you ready? Is your best friend dating a racist homophobe?
Wow.
We discuss how to break that news when we return. We are here to help all of you during this time. And, you know, sometimes the questions that are out there are not even about quarantine and what's happening right now, but it's just about, you know, checking yourself.
Which
so
I
this
love.
This person wants to check her friend right now and also help her because it seems like, according to this person, her friend is dating a racist homophobe. And she asks, how do I make my friend realize they are dating a racist homophobe? I'm sure we have our own opinions about this, Ryan.
Yes.
But we actually have a doctor joining us, a psychotherapist, Dr. Aaron Leonard, to help this person. And by the way, I'm sure this isn't the only person dealing with this. We all have those moments where we realize, whether it be in our relationship or our friends, that the person they're dating might be problematic.
Well, I think we see that oftentimes where, you know, people consider themselves, and once you get into the story, her friend considered herself a huge advocate of, you know, the things that people would think would be woke, right? A big advocate of LGBTQ rights and really involved in a lot of, you know, anti-racism and just equality. But there's always that one little flaw where people are willing to kind of have an exception. They're willing to have an exception to their loved ones or the people around them who say those awful things. But they're like, I know their heart. I know who they are, instead of realizing, guess what? You're actually advocating the wrong thing. You're actually allowing someone to continue to spread something that you are trying to combat. And you have to kind of look at yourself within.
Yeah.
You know?
So this person said, I met her boyfriend at a party. Hannah was hosting. This girl was hosting. One of the first things he did was drunkenly say and congratulate my wife for marrying a hot Asian lesbian.
Oh, God.
My wife is white and I'm Asian. Hannah and Rick are also white. Those are the couple, and Rick's the problematic one. He made degrading sexist comments about Asian women, then called her a killjoy D word. I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say for getting upset. I could continue going into all the other non-PC sense, sense of humor she includes in this letter. I'm not going to get into it. Let's bring in our expert psychotherapist, Dr. Aaron Leonard, right now. Thanks so much for being with us for this interesting question of the day.
Absolutely.
What advice do you have? I guess, like, what is this person supposed to be doing as a friend if she doesn't feel comfortable? And obviously these things for good reason don't make her feel comfortable.
Right. Well, this person is, has a number of sort of psychological issues, right? So those like pathological projections. So when someone generalizes hate without actually knowing the person and having a good reason to hate them, you know, for something superficial or a stereotype or generalizing, they really have a pretty rigid, robust, and static defensive structure. And so that dislike, that is actually coming from within them. They don't like something about themselves. And so they're projecting it onto someone generalized and, you know, some generalized population out there. And that's called externalizing blame. Mm-hmm. And so when people do that, so everyone has some defense mechanisms. We'd go crazy if we didn't. So we all have a little bit of denial, a little bit of projection, deflection, reaction formation, distortions. But when someone has it to the extent that they are projecting hate into the world for without even knowing the people that they're projecting hate onto, then they are extremely problematic, like you said. And that is going to eventually turn on their mate. So that externalized hate and blame is going to show up in their relationship. And then the partner's going to be the target of that hate and blame. And that's really tough stuff. So she might want to excuse it because, oh, it's just this one area. But what she doesn't realize is it's going to be turned on her very quickly. And then she's going to be in a situation that might be emotionally abusive. Mm. And that's not okay. And that's really hard to get out of that.
Well, Dr. Aaron, I think, and I kind of touched on this before we brought you in, but I think it's just tough, one, the being the friend that wrote this, saying, I need to hold my own people around me accountable for dealing with and kind of, you know, allowing them to be in situations that we know that aren't right. So that's difficult. And then two, Hannah, who is this one dating, you know, the person who is the racist homophobe that they, you know, that's what they said. It's hard for her to say, okay, well, yeah, he says these things, but does he really mean it? The excuse making starts.
So joking.
Yeah. So how does
the rationalizations and the justifying and the minimizing? Yeah.
Right. So as you know, the person that wrote this, the friend of Hannah, how are you supposed to, you know, really hold your community around you accountable?
So what I would recommend is that the friend address it in a way that circumvents the friend's defense mechanisms, right? So she's defending her partner, rationalizing, justifying, minimizing. So what the woman needs to do is approach her friend in a way that circumvents defense mechanisms so she can really get the point to sink in. So she wants to, I call it the equation. Start with the positive, talk about how you feel about it, and then the problem. So saying something like, I really, really value our friendship. You mean the world to me. However, I'm really, really worried about what your partner says and the hate he sort of extends into the world.
Right.
So by using that equation, you're circumventing defense mechanisms, so the point of what you're saying can really be absorbed.
Yeah, well, that is some great advice, and we appreciate you for being here to discuss this topic that can be difficult for a lot of people because we are blindsided. Sometimes it's a blind spot we don't realize. And I have that experience. I dated someone who I love dearly, and I don't believe he is necessarily these words racist or homophobe, but I think that even little things could happen that we don't know because of ignorance, because of privilege.
I think we all have to. I think we all have to acknowledge that. Guess what? Any individual that was born in the United States and even everywhere they have been formed by stereotypes. They have been formed by people putting this type of messaging in their brain. So whether or not you identify as that or someone actually is that, I think the decision making factor is: am I going to continue that, or am I going to actually have empathy in somebody's experience? And no, that's not.
Am I going to listen? Like if someone that is of that group says to me what you said wasn't right, am I gonna be defensive and fight it, or say, you know what, you know, that was a joke I've made a lot, or my friends, and I'm gonna now not say that myself, and I'll now continue to spread the word and let them know that it's not right too. Well, thank you so much again, Dr. Aaron Leonard. Where can people find you?
I'm at draaronleonard.com. Yeah. And I also blog for Psychology Today, and I just wrote a blog on this. So
Nice. Really?
Yeah. Well, I can't.
Perfect.
Everyone needs to go read your hot take on this because you are so great. We really appreciate you for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And
now, coming up, speaking of brighter places, it's our Yaz Queen of the Day. How one school is helping adults with autism gain professional skills and get jobs in Hollywood. That's next. Okay, we are back to bring you our show from our quarantine, like all of you. Now it's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
My favorite part of the show. It's fun, it's light, it's inspiring. What we all need right now. And yeah, today is actually World Autism Day, where we're recognizing and celebrating the rights of individuals with autism. And I'm so excited to have someone from this organization that I love and support. It's called Same. Exceptional Minds. It's here in Los Angeles. It's a vocational training program and professional academy for adults with autism. Benjamin Maxner joins us right now from Exceptional Minds. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I hope you both are safe and well.
Yes, you too.
It's an interesting time right now because, obviously everyone's going through the same thing. How are you doing? First things first before we jump into this conversation.
I'm good. Thank you so much, Ryan. Yeah, no, my family's healthy. Everyone's well. It's a little crazy with my two young daughters, running around disrupting things. But, we're getting by.
I mean, y'all parents have become teachers at this point. So I hope y'all, they changed math, by the way. Math is not the same with how we learn. It. You doing multiplication tables. That's not a thing anymore. So
yeah, I know. Yeah.
How has Exceptional Minds pivoted during this time? I know you have this great space that all of your students come together at, and obviously you can't do that anymore. So how are you, one, celebrating today, but also working to continue to do your work during this time?
Yeah, well, I mean, every day at Exceptional Minds is celebrating Autism Awareness Day. Our goal is about kind of transforming expectations, changing the conversation, really trying to bring awareness to the workplace about the competence of individuals on the spectrum. In terms of the pivot, we're really fortunate in that we were already, our services are really unique in terms of how we offer visual effects training, animation training, motion graphics, and 3D animation and design. There's very few people out there doing that for individuals with autism specifically. So we already had a virtual model going.
Wow.
So we were doing virtual private lessons, to service people across the country, sometimes in other countries. And so for us to pivot, a lot of our students were already familiar. That's how we recruited them into our program. So switching to that pivot was something that was pretty seamless. We are super, super focused on best practices of instructional design and, really breaking things down in a way that makes our curriculum a lot more flexible in terms of the delivery model.
And a lot of, by the way, the students and alumni from Exceptional Minds are editing, doing animation, working professionally for some of the biggest movie studios, TV networks out there and doing amazing work.
They sure are.
One, if you have someone who friend, family member who is autistic and wants to gain these skills or has these skills and needs support and guidance, Exceptional Minds is a great resource. And I also just want to know how COVID-19 is impacting the autistic community overall. And what advice do you have?
Yeah, it's funny. I just submitted an article for a magazine, about this very specifically in terms of, parenting tips and things like that, in terms of dealing with autism. I think that this is tough. So many people on the spectrum really rely on routines and schedules and predictability, and this kind of throws everything out of whack.
Yeah.
And so, whatever the schedule is, kind of like you mentioned earlier, I was talking to parents, you are not a school teacher or a principal. Converting your home into a school is probably not the best idea. You need to go with something that's functional and that works for you. But creating schedules and routines is to the best of your ability, assuming that they're going to need training on those schedules and that you're going to need to do walkthroughs, that'll help everybody rather than just kind of have amorphous verbal expectations that are out there and just hope that everybody lives up to them. But I think the autism community, just more generally on the financial side of it, is hit pretty hard. I know as a behavior analyst, a lot of the in-home service providers now are being asked to stay home. So a lot of those service supports and stuff are, even though it's deemed medically necessary, aren't necessarily being delivered. I know that nonprofits like ours have been hit pretty hard, because a lot of the funding and the donations and stuff, are drying up or are at least on hold while everybody's, reassessing the economic landscape. So it's been tough. I think our students have fared really well one of the things that COVID-19 has taught exceptional minds in our community is, man, how tightly knit we are. Like, everyone shows up on time. They're excited to go to school. We've actually had to open up social Zoom rooms just so that at lunch people can hang out. You know, yeah. Everybody misses each other and they're really excited to see their faces. You know, I know my daughter's the same way. Her school does like kind of a once a week check-in, and she gets so excited to see all her classmates. And, you know, so trying to keep, you know, the social stuff going, I think is really important. You know, when you talk about stereotypes, it's pretty easy to say, oh, well, they don't need it as much. So we'll leave it, you know, on the side. And in this particular instance, you know, everybody needs it. We're social animals.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us to share about all this today and being social with us. This is our way of socializing today.
It's wonderful that you guys are reaching out. I really appreciate it.
Aww.
Well, Ben, you're
in the current climate that's likely to get missed, you know?
Yeah. And Ben, you are a 2-time winning Yes Queen Award recipient. So.
Oh, is this
that's true. We have featured Exceptional Minds.
Yeah,
yes.
So I think you just continue to do what you're doing. And I can predict another Yes Queen in your future.
Oh, I hope so. But yeah, come check us out. You know, a lot of our students are going to be promoting their personal material and stuff on our website at www.exceptional-minds.org. And check out what we have going on there. I'm sure they would love, if you got extra time on your hands, which some of us do, to check out their stuff. It'd be great.
Well, thank you again. Benjamin Maxner is from Exceptional Minds. Now coming up, a football star launches a COVID-19 relief program. Details on that next. As we wrap up the show today, we want to give a shout out to someone who's doing something really great. You know, we highlight people throughout the show, of course, who are continuing to contribute during this time of need. Now, the Carolina Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey just announced the launch of his 22NU COVID-19 relief program, which will raise money to support frontline medical workers, including physicians, nurses, and other hospital staff throughout the Carolinas. Ooh. He's only 23, and he says he felt compelled to take action after watching these heroes risk their own lives to save others. He said this, "I am moved by the heroic and selfless efforts of our frontline healthcare providers throughout the Carolinas and beyond. As such, I've decided to launch an effort to help them in their life-saving work."
Oh my goodness. You know what? Yes. I don't know who the Carolina Panthers are, but this person is going to be a star. You know, Christian, I think I will always go back to our interview with former astronaut Scott Kelly, and he said it best.
It's your favorite.
It's my quote, I feel like, of the week, to be honest, and our own personal Yes Queen is, you know, he said, when you look back at this in history, you're going to wonder if you were help to this, or were you the problem? And I think people really figuring out and using their platforms and using their own, you know, money flow to help other people, that's what it's all about. That's how we come together, right?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, there's nothing more to say there. It's like whatever you can do to be of service, and you might not have money. It might just be your time or checking in with someone who needs it, checking in on a neighbor. Like, you just don't know where you can be of service, and don't let money limit you in that way.
Yes.
We all have something to offer during this time. We are all a gift. So yeah, that does it for the show. Remember, we post our shows as a podcast on our site. We are channelq.com, and on our app, the radio.com app. Just search Let's Go There. Click on that subscribe button when you find us, so you're notified when our podcasts go up. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we've got a big guest celebrity joining us.
Yes, we do. The one and only Gigi Gorgeous, darling.
Yes.
And, you know, we haven't seen her in a while, actually. And she's newly married now. There's so many life changes. So,
really.
I cannot wait to chit-chat with her for a little bit.
Exactly. That's tomorrow. Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan. 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, live right here on Channel Q. We are sending you love and light.
And, honey, you better remember to slay.
Have a great night. See you soon. Love y'all.
Bye, y'all.